Welcome to the Trail Life Podcast, here with another episode of the Switchback Chronicles. I'm Michelle, owner and founder of Switchback. At Switchback, we make high-quality custom running and hiking neck gaiters. We also have our shop here in San Diego, running an outdoor lifestyle boutique where we sell only women-owned brands in an effort to empower and support women in running and outdoor sports. You can visit us at switchback.com or here in Little Italy in San Diego, or give us a follow on Instagram. It's spelled S-W-C-H-B-A-K. I'm here with my special guest co-host, Isabella Janovic, CEO of Janovic Communications, founder of our local group run Ultra Buds. She is also one of our very own Switchback athletes and a dog mom.
That's right.
And Isabella and I are here interviewing our guest, Alyssa Clark. Alyssa is an endurance athlete. She's a coach, amongst many other accomplishments, which we will go over in this podcast. Last month, placed first female at SD 100 and is also one of our Switchback athletes and cat mom.
Well, help me turn the turning. Well, help me get it right. I don't want to hurt nobody. Well, I don't want to fight. Well, offer me the peace of mind and let me.
Hi, Alyssa.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here, you guys.
Woo-hoo. I'm glad that we got in the cat mom. Most important. Yep. I don't think any of us have human children.
I do.
No.
You do? Oh, why did she do that?
I have.
Oh, yes.
My daughter and then total with my husband, there are 5 children and we have 2 dogs. All the children are grown. They're They're gone. They are off doing their
own. That makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah. Just want to get into SD 100, just because it's fresh in our minds. Just happened, what, a month ago? And first off, congratulations on placing first. That is amazing. And before we get into it, I just want to tell a little story, because before we hopped on the podcast, Alyssa was talking, we were all talking about the heat, right? It's hot out. Alyssa, I think, thrives in the heat. And let me tell you something. The day before SD 100, she came into the shop and everyone's freaking out about how hot it's going to be at SD 100. And Alyssa goes, "So I heard it's going to be like 85. That's perfect." And I'm like, "What? What is this woman talking about?" It's, I guess the heat for you is not a huge deal, unless it's probably crazy hot, but it didn't seem to be too big of a deal at SD 100. Or how did you feel the heat out there that day?
Yeah, I do love heat. It definitely seems to work in my favor. I actually have a deep fear of cold, to be perfectly honest. So cold races freak me out. That's honestly one of my biggest struggles.
Wow.
It definitely on paper looked pretty reasonable, and I would say it was until the afternoon, because peak heat's like 3 to 5 p.m. and I hit, I think, the longest section, excuse me, without aid in that time period, and it got hot. I definitely was experiencing some cramps. I definitely should have brought one more water bottle with me, I was right on the edge, but probably could have used one more water bottle just to be on the safe side. But yeah, last year I feel like I ran 3 very hot races. And so I've kind of dialed in how to keep myself cool. And also I think the biggest thing with heat is people really panic with heat. And so for me, I just try to stay, yeah, it's hot. That's okay. On whatever river crossing I go through, even if it takes a bit of time, I'm always dunking my hat in, dunking my gator in, all of that. And then like tons of ice at the aid station. So I think people, A, don't start cooling themselves soon enough. Mm-hmm. And B, think, oh, I'm wasting time by doing this. And you are saving, I think, so much time by taking the extra steps to cool yourself. So I think just over the years, I've just given myself some techniques to deal with heat. And so I think it's also a mental game where I just don't panic with heat. I panic with cold, but I don't panic with heat. And so I think it's a lot of fun. And yeah, San Diego 100 was pretty hot, I will say.
So maybe all the years you spent in Hawaii helped with your love for heat and humidity. It doesn't faze you.
I think Hawaii definitely helped. And the nice thing, so my husband's military, we almost always end up living near the ocean in pretty warm places. And so we were in Florida, then in California for a bit of time, southern Italy. So heat is just what we get. And definitely enjoyed that aspect. And then I'm a big baby when it comes to cold.
But well, you're an ice climber.
Yeah, I know. But you should see how big my puffy jacket is. It is massive.
And yet you're still able to move around in this giant puffy jacket, apparently.
Yeah, technically you're not really supposed to climb in them, but I do it anyway. I look like a goober. Yeah, it's funny though, like skiing and ice climbing, like when I know it's winter, I can deal with cold a lot better because I'm prepared for it. It's when it's like you're in a race and it gets really cold at night and it's the summertime and you're not expecting it, or it's like spring or fall. That's what really gets me, is that moment of, wait, it wasn't supposed to be this cold. Now I'm freezing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And in case for those that don't know, Switchback actually has an ice bandana out now, which I recently used during my 5-hour hot run that went up to 111 degrees. So nice. Thank you, Michelle, for creating that.
Yeah, that was in collaboration with our friends at Run Dirty here in San Diego. And yeah, I also used it for the first time a few weeks ago at Black Mountain, pretty hot out. And honestly, I had it on the entire time and I didn't start to get hot till the last mile of the race.
That's good.
It was pretty awesome. Yeah.
I'm going to guess that you're using that for the 24-hour race.
Oh, yeah. You never know. Fun fact here, Alyssa is actually my coach right now. She's preparing me for the Endurance Race Series South Bay 24-hour race, which is also sponsored by Switchback. And we're going to have a booth out there, Switchback and Ultra Buds booth out there. And you just never know how hot it's going to be in the South Bay in the middle of August. So this heat training is, it's hard. It's not fun, but I'm getting through it. And I love the mental thinking. Those are good tips. Hey, it's not going to be bad. It's not going to be bad. It's only going to be 85, 90. No biggie. No big deal. It could be worse. I could be at Badwater.
Okay. That is honestly always one of my pieces of gauging something where I'm like, it could be Badwater. Also, for those who live in Southern California, I attempted to run the Backbone Trail unsupported in mid-July. So it could be worse. It could be the Backbone Trail, which was like 100 plus degrees on completely exposed ridgelines, unsupported with water like 20 miles apart. So yeah. I was like, this isn't bad. This could be worse.
So much has to do with that mindset, right?
So what else have you done this year? So you did San Diego 100 in June. Did you do any races before that this year?
Yeah, so I did actually a skiing event where it's like a last man standing, but for skiing. So you ski a 1200 foot run uphill. So it's technically called the backcountry or like skimo, not the same thing, but we'll call it within that, where you skin up a hill at a ski resort and then you ski down. You do one lap every hour on the hour. So I did that, lasted, unfortunately got a cold right before I started, and then got really sick the second night. So made it about 31 hours on that one. And then I raced a 50K, Griffith Park 50K in March. Unfortunately dropped from a race in April, actually because of hypothermia. Going back, it was like 40 degrees and pouring rain, and I twisted my back or did something to my back and then was going hypothermic and was like, I'm good. No one's having fun right now.
Yeah.
So that actually led to San Diego 100. I signed up literally the last possible day because of the drop. I was like, yeah, I've always wanted to do this race. It kind of fits in my schedule right now. So yeah, let's just jump in. Oh, and I'd done Bishop I did Bishop 50K in May, which was, that's a fun kind of old school race as well. But yeah, so I've been doing some races. I think I would say the latter half of my year is probably a bit more weighted than the first half has been. So I have UTMB, Kodiak, and then fingers crossed, hopefully Hurt in the next few months. Yeah.
Wow.
So
Kodiak 100, right?
Yeah.
100 miler? Yep. Because that's a UTMB race too now.
It is. It's a world major next year. Not this year, but next year. So they're switching from Canyons to Kodiak, which I think is awesome because I think Southern California has such an amazing trail scene. And so it's really cool to have this kind of global spotlight, I think, on how amazing our terrain is down here. Like, people do not believe me when I say, oh, we have 10 plus thousand foot mountains, like, everywhere. It's such good running.
Big Bear is incredible.
A lot of people don't know. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the race directors, they've been putting on that race for a long time. Super sweet. Really involved in the trail community. I run into them random races all the time.
Yeah. No, and it's such a great route. It's like you have all the components of a great race. You have a super cool mountain town. It's not that far to fly into. A great route. Great support. It's everything you could want.
And then you're going to go back to Hurt in January?
Hopefully. Yeah. It's always lottery, God's willing, but I have some unfinished business there.
Nice.
So how do you train for Hurt in Southern California? Because that's a very specific type of terrain, all the jungle and roots and very technical, very humid. What does that training look like?
Yeah, when I did it 2 years ago, I was in Monterey, but actually we spent like the 3 weeks before or 3 weeks of like peak training in Bozeman when it was negative 30 degrees. So a lot of treadmill running. Yeah. And you just, so the cool thing with the, you're not getting the footwork, but Hurt is, it's basically like 20-ish minute hills. And so you basically, I would just go up like 20 minutes at the same grade. And then flat it out or put it downhill. So just practicing that pattern of Hurt on the treadmill. So treadmill is definitely, I think, a useful tool. Finding terrain. Gosh, I'm trying to think. There's definitely, like, I would say in Mission Trails, I don't remember which mountain, but there's one where it's super rocky staircase.
It's a lot of Mission Trails is like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would say it's actually, yes, it's not the roots and the humidity, but it is that footwork awareness. And it's a pretty similar, like, thousand-ish foot climbs to Hurt. So I would say Mission's probably going to be about one of the ones that
good training
I'll
spot.
Utilize.
Yeah.
Maybe like Quaipe. Quaipe?
Yeah.
Quaipe. However you say it.
I never know how to say that. I don't know. I was out there yesterday though. Quaipai.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Doing repeats.
Yeah.
Fun stuff.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But to your point, Alyssa, I think sometimes we get so wrapped up in, or at least I do, and I know other people do, is you're training for something. And if I have to go on a treadmill, even if I do a decent treadmill run, in my mind, I'm like, oh, it's a treadmill, so it's not good enough. And so it'd be interesting, like, you're a coach, so, like, your point of view as a coach, like, any run, no matter what's on, like, that's putting in work. And sometimes I think we need to get out of our heads a little bit of, oh, it's not the perfect terrain, it's not the ideal situation. We still can train for those things in less than ideal situations, right?
Totally. I am a huge... fan's a strong word. I am a huge believer in the use of treadmills for if you have like, obviously the more specific you can get, the better off you'll be. But sometimes we get so caught up in being specific that we lose sight of, hey, we just need to get the work done and it's going to work out as it's going to work out. And that's the best that we can do. And so I really love using the treadmill for, say, yeah, I know I can hit an 800,000 foot climb and really focus on that specific piece of it and then run on the flats or some have 3 to 6% downhill, get that piece in, and I can just do that routine over and over. Whereas if you're out, say you live in a flat area and you just can't get that, like, the treadmill is going to be great, or it's negative 30 out and it's super not safe to run outside. also, I love treadmills because they keep you really honest about your pace. Where it's, yeah, you're not hitting that pace. Like you, that's why I actually do speed work. If I'm doing, say, flat speed work, I'll do it on the treadmill because oftentimes I will surprise myself with, oh, I can go a little bit faster. Oh, I can go a little bit faster. And sometimes when you're outside, I feel like you can say, oh, it's a little windy out, or oh, it's this or that, or oh, there's a little hill. And it's with the treadmill, it's just a super honest, hey, I'm running this 640 or I'm not. And I think that is really helpful of just keeping yourself on that pacing, or like for Hurt, needing to do 15-minute mile climbs or 14-minute mile climbs, where it's, yeah, okay, this is how it feels, and I'm just like going to keep hiking along at this pace. So I do think they're super useful. I have a ton of people who train for bigger mountain races that live in like Chicago, or they live in New York City. And so it's like getting in the stairwells and going up and down, or getting on the treadmill. And I think too, that there's a huge piece of, if you can be mentally resilient enough to do like a 2 to 3 hour session where you're running up and down a set of stairs, like you're going to be fine.
Seriously.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
going to crush.
Mental training.
For sure.
Or is he like, oh, you could run on a loop for 5 hours and 111 degrees, like you're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
Because you know how tough that is, and you can put that in your back pocket and pull out and be like, oh, it's, you know, not nearly as bad as that was. Or, hey, I could do this, or I did that, so I can definitely do this.
And these runs have been solo. I haven't found many takers to join me on these loop runs.
Oh, I wonder why.
Every now and then, someone will join me for an hour. It's a little lonely out there.
Do you listen to anything?
Yeah, I do a combo of podcasts. And gosh, luckily, a few weeks ago, Sally McRae did like a 3 hour podcast. And at first, I was like, 3 hours? What the heck does she have to talk about?
Yeah.
But like, her and her husband just go back and forth. And it was just like entertaining. And then I have audiobooks. I listen to a lot of murder books, which is great. And then music to pump me up. And then doing these loops, they're usually at a park. So I have some people watching to do too. Yeah, that helps. But
nice. Nice.
Michelle is also training for this race. She's doing the 6 hour, right? Six.
Oh, sweet.
12?
12. She's doing 12.
I would really use the term training very lightly.
It sounds like you're doing hill repeats yesterday.
Yeah.
It's a race.
Yeah. 4th of July. On 4th of July, we have a tradition where we go out and we do Cowles Mountain repeats. I was out there for 4 hours doing repeats. And then yesterday was out at Quai Pai, did 3 repeats because I didn't have time to do more. But just getting, this podcast isn't about me, but just trying to get some hours in, whether that be mountain or flat, whatever. I'm definitely running a lot of flat road recently just because of where I live right now. But I don't get as much trail time in as I'd like. So any opportunity I have to go out and do something maybe a little bit crazy on the trails, I take the opportunity to do now. So the 12 hour, honestly, I don't have any set goals or expectations. I may be walking for 12 hours. I don't even know what's going to happen. We'll see. We'll see. But yeah, going to be out there for 12 hours. And then I'll be back. I'll probably go to sleep for a little bit, and then I'll come back early, early morning to see how Izzy is doing in her 24 hour and watch her finish her 24 hours. So it should be fun.
Oh, I'm excited. I'll be in Chamonix. So you guys can text me in the middle of the night or call.
It's a place to be.
For sure. Yeah.
That's nice to know. You can be a lifeline with a time difference.
Oh, yeah, totally. So nice. This was always my trick. Like when I lived over in Europe, is that my poor parents, if a race was going badly, they would get a call because I knew they would be awake. I'd be like, oh, yes, this works out really well. And my poor mom, just stop. What are you doing? Why are you on the side of a mountain? Like, I'm fine. I'm just sad. Probably need a snack.
Yeah. I just want to back up a little bit because we've gotten into all these crazy things you've done, skiing for 30 hours and winning SD100. And when did you get into endurance I want to say endurance running, but you do some other sports and things as well. Like, when did you get into this, and like, how did this happen? What's your why? What happened here?
Yeah, great question. Also, I apologize because I'm normally the host of, I also do a podcast, so I'm used to turning questions back on. Or like,
totally
I feel
fine.
Like all three of us are in that of, oh yeah, we can all host or do host. So I think I grew up in a family, I grew up in Vermont, and I grew up in a family that just, my dad was a triathlete and a marathoner. And my mom has biked across the country. She's a cross-country skier, biked across Europe, just very adventurous, endurance-y type people. And so I grew up thinking that a family vacation of biking across Prince Edward Island or like hiking 10 to 12 miles a day in Glacier National Park was like totally normal. Mm. So I definitely grew up with just endurance sports as very like just a part of our kind of family culture. And so I think that was a piece of it. And then I was a cross country skier and went to a school for cross country skiing when I was a freshman and sophomore. And we would go out on these like 4 to 5 hour training runs in the mountains of Vermont on the Long Trail and the Appalachian Trail. And I just thought it was so fun to move through terrain on my own 2 feet, eating snacks with my friends. And so I tried triathlon and was like, I don't really like biking or swimming. I think there's this thing called running races, and I think I just want to do that. But I read Dean Karnazes' book, Ultramarathon Man, when I was 10. And even though I didn't love running at the time, I just went, oh, I'm going to do that someday. And when I was a lacrosse player in college and was dabbling with endurance things during the summer. And so I was like, oh, I'll run a marathon when I graduate college, just because I think a lot of collegiate athletes have this big question mark of what happens after I have all of this structure. And I skipped the marathon. I picked up How Guide to Ultra Running, followed the 50K plan to the absolute mile, and ran my first 50K 2 days before, back in the East Coast, 2 days before I left to move to Hawaii for my first job out of college. And I remember having this feeling of when everyone else seemed to get tired, I seemed to gain energy. And I never really got into ultra running because I thought I would make anything of it. I just wanted to see how far I could go and just found a lot of freedom in being able to go these long distances and just fell in love with the community. Hawaii running community was my first community. They're still some of my closest friends. I think I have the most concentration of friends still in Hawaii of all of the places that we've lived. So I feel really lucky that I think they gave me such a wonderful taste of what the ultra running community is. And then ran my, I shouldn't be saying this, but ran my first 100 about a year and a half after graduating college. So after that first 50K, I normally tell people to wait a little longer than that before, hey, let's have a little more progression. But Hurt 100 was my first 100 and just fell really deeply in love with it. I'm also, I met my husband out there, military spouse, and with the military, you're constantly reinventing yourself, constantly moving jobs, and running has been the biggest constant in my life that I get to take anywhere I go. And it's felt like this companion that I feel really lucky to have and has been this thread of joy and gratitude. Yeah, I've been able to carry. So yeah, that's Alyssa running in a nutshell.
100 was the first one. Wow.
Yep.
And it makes sense if you live there and you're running those trails.
Great. It was so funny because I had read about it right before I moved and I was like, there's no way I'm going to do that. Like, it looked so hard and so crazy. And the first year, I didn't really engage. I did one 50K and then a marathon. But I was working so much that I didn't really have time to get to know the trail community. And then the next year I ended up putting in super hurt and got pulled 15th off the wait list. And I had a couple of people who knew it. They were like, start trading, you're in. And I was like, what did I just do?
That's awesome.
And yeah, that changed my life for sure. And the people I met along the way, like we would get up at 1 a.m. to do runs. We would run after work. Like we ran every bit of that course at every second of the day leading up to the race. And I feel really lucky I had the group, like the class of hurt, because when you stand at the start line, you have those friends with you. It's pretty special.
Awesome. And then how did you turn that into 200s? Because this is when I first met Alyssa. We were both training for the Moab 240 and typical Izzy fashion just reaches out on Instagram. And that's how my relationships start with people.
That sounds about right.
I love it.
And I remember telling my husband, Kyle, this chick's so cool. Like how she's training for this and that. And this is also how I met Callie Vinson. And then after the race, he's like, hey, how'd your little Instagram friend do? I'm like, oh, she won it.
Oh, man. I have 200 mile in the mind, we'll say for next year, but 200 mile distance. Yeah, I haven't done it in a little bit. I've been focusing on the hundreds a little bit more. In classic, what 25 year olds do when they have too much time on their hands? Googled the hardest races in the world.
That's not what I was doing when I was 25 and had too much time on my hands. I'll tell you that right now, but go on.
Oh man. In my head, when we were living over in Italy at the time. And so it's very hard to get a job over in Italy for a military because we can't work in the Italian economy. Actually, they just changed that. So now we can, but I was in between jobs. And so I was like, oh, I'll go in all in on the ultra running thing. I'll see what I can come up with. So I Googled hardest races and two of the ones that popped up were the Dragon's Back in Wales, which is a 6-day stage race, completely unmarked. And then Tour de Jean, which is the 200 plus mile race in the Italian Alps. I was like, cool, I'll do them in 1 year. Spoiler alert, didn't finish either of them. Because when you're 26, you're really dumb. You're really dumb. I will say that. So Dragon's Back, yeah. So I guess that's how I got into 200 mile races. And I actually I had this curse at about 100 and I could not get past 120 miles for the first three times I attempted over 200 mile races. So I dropped, Dragon's Back is a stage race, so it's not really the same as like a go 200 miler. Tour de Jean, I dropped at 120 the first year. And then I tried the Pinhoti Trail, which is a 350 mile trail that's the start of the Appalachian Mountains. It actually does connect to the AT. So that's 350 miles. I attempted that self-supported, dropped at 120. And then I went back to Tour de Jean, dropped it. Maybe I made it to 130, but about, I was like, I don't know if I'm cut out to do 200s. This just seems to be a real sticking point. But then the year that I dropped from Tour, I was like, okay, I have all this fitness, and yes, I'd done 100 miles. That's the really tricky part about dropping from a 100 miler or 200 miler is that depending on where you drop, you still did a really massive effort, but because you didn't finish it, you don't have this feeling of, oh, I did this really hard thing. Where 120 mile race in the Italian Alps is still really hard.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I have all this fitness, I'll use it. So I went back to the Pinhoti Trail, did it supported and finished that. So that was the start of, oh, maybe I can do this. And I'd signed up for Moab in 2020, but then with COVID, et cetera, I pushed it and finally did Moab in 22. And I'd done Pinhoti in 21, Moab in 22. And that's when I was like, okay, maybe I can do this 200 mile. But I think that Izzy knows as well. It is, once you understand, I feel like when you first do one, you're like, oh, how bad could it be? And then you get in one, you're like, the sleep deprivation is unreal. Yeah.
It was crazy. Like, I always describe it as a roller coaster. You're going to go through a roller coaster of physical, mental emotions. You will cry, whether you're a guy or a girl. I tell people that you're going to cry at some point.
I actually didn't cry in Moab. I cried in Pinhoti a lot. I did not cry in Moab. But I paced and crewed a friend at Cocodona this year. And I was like, after doing that, because I think it's one, on one side, when you're racing, you're like, yeah, I know this is really hard. But then seeing what you put your crew and pacers through, I was like, wow, I don't know if I can ask people to do this again.
I was literally just going to bring that up when you were talking about it, because I know we were talking that day at the shop when Shade was there, and he was telling you how the only race he'd ever crewed, was it Cocodona, he said? What race was it? And he was like, it was horrible. And then I'm talking about how I've crewed or paced the SD100 now several times, and I'm like, it's a party when you're doing a 100-miler. You're like, it's so much fun.
One night. Only one night.
You're out there one night, and you were telling him, you're like, you need to go out and crew or pace a 100-miler so you can see how much more fun it is. But also, to your point, one of my friends, I wasn't going to say his name, but let's say it anyways, Josh. Hi, Josh, if you're listening. He was like, we've crewed and paced him a few couple times now at SC100. And he'd never paced or crewed before. And then one of our friends asked him to. And afterwards, he was like, I am so sorry, you guys. I had no idea what I was putting you through. Because, yes, 100, it's still difficult, right?
Yeah.
You're still out there.
Yeah.
You're still putting time in. You're still, there's all these things. And he was like, man, I'm sorry. I'm also very grumpy when I get past a certain point. He's, wow, I had no idea what my crew and pacers were going through. And I've never crewed or paced like a 200 plus miler. And just from what you all have told me on how different it is, as far as just like what everyone goes through, it's just, it's a different animal. Right.
You have to be so self-sufficient. You have to be able to take naps in a car. The driving, sometimes it takes an hour and a half to get to an aid station, 2 hours at Bigfoot.
You have to navigate. Don't ask
and this
me
is
to navigate.
Different times of the night. So my husband was like the person in charge of driving, and he said it was absolutely crazy. And then last year I was like, I don't want any pacers for Bear 100. Can you just be at the aid stations? He's like, it's only one night. And after that race, he's like, that was a piece of cake. The aid stations were so close. Like, I had plenty of time.
Yeah.
Like, it was only one night.
Yeah. So
that
much different.
That is exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what Cody was like. San Diego was so nice. Everything was closed. You were done by the morning. It was great. But yeah, it's, I can't tell you. I think like every couple of hours during Cocodona, I'd be like, I'm so sorry.
Apologizing.
Yeah. But it's honestly, it's wild though. There were times where I was driving just like, I should not be driving right now. Yep. This is definitely not very safe. I am on like maybe an hour of sleep right now, and it is 2 a.m. and
these
roundabouts.
Oh my gosh.
I will say, I do think we live in a van right now, and having a vehicle where you can actually sleep in a bed of some kind, I think makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. For me, it's okay. I have 2 hours. I'm going to get a good 2 hours of sleep versus putting the seat back or something like that.
That's really good.
I've done both. Yeah. That's why I feel like I'm only going to crew or pace races if it's something I could drive to, because I went to Arizona and helped Candace with her FKT, and we're just sleeping like this in the car. Oh, I'm like, this is awful. Speaking of 300s, there's a 300 next year now. Yep. Just reminding you.
Yeah.
Does that mean you're doing it, Izzy? Or?
No.
What's the?
I'll be working.
She was going to.
I was going to, and then it all came back to me when I helped with the FKT. I'm like, no, I don't want to be out here for six nights.
Oh my God.
No, I think on list of the long trail is really high on my list of 200-ish mile efforts, being from Vermont. it's just, I grew up running those trails. So I feel like that's definitely one that's very high. And then, I'd still love to do the Triple Crown, and I have to go back to Tour de Jean. Has to happen. But yeah, I'm trying to figure out, there's such huge efforts. It's trying to figure out how to, I think, other than the Triple Crown, but I think you have to be, I know a lot of people who do start getting into 3 to 4 of them per year. And I feel like you can really mess yourself up when you start putting in too many of those. It's just, I think, hard on the sleep deprivation side of things, where your brain is just, I'm not okay. And that takes, Izzy, how long did it take you after Moab to feel like, okay?
I had the feet problem. So that was my issue. So I couldn't put shoes on. But I think I went back to the gym a week later, and I could only do certain things because of the shoes. Like, I couldn't run. But I remember after Moab, you have a brain fog almost. And it was really the first week back at work. I was like, I couldn't work. Luckily, I own my own business, but I'm like, I can't work like a full day. I would have to take like huge breaks because you just can't think. So that's another thing. These people who like do the multiple 200s and they have like full-time jobs and families, like coming back to all that life and being able to think.
That's interesting. It's not easy.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard about this brain fog before. That's
It's like I find it happens to me like in social situations or if I'm on a call or something like that, where all of a sudden you're just like, I can't be here. I'm so tired. I can't human. I need to go lay down. Yeah. It's just for me. I also get like sinus. I don't know. I just feel like this pressure in my sinuses of, I can tell my cortisol levels are just like through the roof. But I just get overwhelmed where it's, I'm so tired. I can't like exist in this space. I have to go be in a quiet.
Do you think that is just because the body's recovering? What do you think that causes that?
Just gone through so much trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your hormones are super off.
You're all out of whack. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Your body's just was crazy. After doing Pinhoti, I would wake up and be like, I have to be running. Like, it took a while to feel almost like not safe, but just like to bring your stress levels down enough that you could relax, because your body is just, even though you think it should be completely depleted, it's still trying to spit, I think, some kind of reaction out. And so it's just so tense. And then you wake up and you're like, I should be going. You're like, no, you're okay. I can never, like, after San Diego 100, we went back and I just accept this is the way it is. So it doesn't really bother me anymore. But I finished it, I think 3-ish. And we got back, tried to go to bed, and I was just awake. Like, it's just impossible to sleep. A 50 mile or whatever, totally fine. But you start like 100. I'm not going to sleep that first night, which it is what it is. Yeah. Yeah. 200 miler, I will say, after Moab, I think I finished at like 6 a.m, was in a hotel. Cody begged a hotel to take me in at 8:30 a.m.
People have that issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I slept from, I think, 9 a.m. until 7 p.m. Because I think at that point I was just like, I am so tired. It doesn't, like, people kept asking, oh, what do you want to eat after this? I was like, all I've been doing is eating. I don't want to eat. All I want to do is sleep. I want no food.
A lot of eating. So what is it? The Pinhoti Trail?
Pinhoti.
Pinhoti Trail. So is that an FKT you want to shoot for in the future?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that, I actually have the women's FKT because I went back. So Corey Waltering has the men's time, and then I have the women's supported time. Yeah.
And but just in case people don't know, can you tell people what an FKT is?
Oh, good call. Fastest known time. So it's like a record of,
like, but it's not people, like somebody's, it's called fastest known because it's not something that's like officially been recorded, correct?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I've thought about this a little bit. I think it's to respect the fact that there was a possibility, maybe in the 80s or 90s or whatever, before we started really keeping track of it, that there's a strong possibility someone else ran it faster. So it's just, hey, so ads the wording have been recorded.
Gotcha.
And then there's three categories within FKTs. There's fully supported, which is, I was literally a part of the Benhodi's on a road section. So I was like reaching into the car and like taking Oreos out and eating the Oreos, like that level of supported, to self-supported, which is basically like what most thru hikers do, where anything that's accessible to anyone on the trail, you can have. So you can mail stuff to yourself. You could get rides if you wanted to. You could stop at grocery stores, but you couldn't have, say, like, couldn't have Izzy come out and give me food because, And then there's unsupported, which is no outside help. Basically, you can fill water from, I think, public areas, just or like filter water.
So you're just carrying everything you would want. Yeah. Okay.
Totally.
Cool. So I want to make a note here for all the women out there that you do not have to be an elite or professional runner to try to set an FKT. Mm-mm. Alyssa is actually the one who inspired me to try my first FKT after I interviewed her for a blog. And there's actually a movement out there called Women Who FKT. So you can just go to the website, Fastest Known Time, and you can look up your local area. You can look up areas you're traveling to or maybe that you want to travel to. So I've now set two FKTs, and I'm not a professional or elite runner. I'm not a fast runner, but I went out there and I did it. I did them both supported, where I stashed stuff ahead of time or use public stuff. So ladies, go out there and try one. Go find one in your area, even if you don't set the new record, or maybe there's no woman name up there yet and you could be the first one.
And then is there a way, can you tell people, is there a way to have this then recorded somewhere? Is there what, like, you know how you go on there and it'll say, Alyssa has the FKT of blah, blah, blah. So how do you get that up there if you were to want to attempt something like that? Who do you contact to have that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So on the FKT website, you find the route you want to do. I would say definitely make sure you start and finish, what the parameters are, because sometimes they can, you just want to do it as accurately as you can.
Yep.
Decide what style you want to do. And then certain routes are like premier routes. And so like the John Muir Trail, the Long Trail, the like really well-known trails, you have to announce that you're doing this attempt. And you also have to have like an InReach or something like that that's recording as you go so people can track it. Okay. But for most every other route, I think there's only like 10 premier routes, you just decide when you want to do it, you hit go, you decide what style you want to do it, and then you run it, you finish, and then you go onto the FKT website and you can right on there, it's like submit Fastest Known Time, you submit the watch data. I think it asks for two, so it's like your GPX and Strava are generally the easiest. You can submit pictures, and then they ask for a write-up. The write-up can be as easy as, I started at 6:01 a.m. and it was cloudy, but it was really fun, and I finished at 7:59 p.m. Yay. Or it can be like an entire whole like
book.
The sun was set. Yeah, it can be a complete book. So it totally depends on how much information. And then that goes to, there's regional editors FKT has, or actually around the world, and they review it to make sure that you didn't go off route or that everything's as it should be. And then they accept it. It goes on the website. Yeah.
Cool.
And I think it's awesome because, as first of all, there are a ton of routes that either don't have female times or they only have female times for like certain categories. And so I encourage all women to go out, set an FKT, and several of mine are the first women's times. And it's because I want to make sure people know this is possible, especially on, because I have some background in climbing. I've done some more technical routes that a lot of women are afraid to do. And I want to be like, no, we belong here. We can do this. You can go out and solo that route. Obviously, if you have the skill set, but don't be afraid to be in that space and to challenge yourself to be in kind of a more male dominated area. FKTs are fun. I have been like itching to, I always do one. I love racing, but I also very much have an adventure side, and I haven't really done as much of the adventures this year because I've been focusing more on racing, and I'm like dying to go do something.
I got a new one I just found. I was visiting my friend in Atlanta, Georgia, and they have their version of Greenbelt. I think it's 22 miles. And I'm like, then there's no female times. I'm like, what? I'm like, I'm going to come back and visit you like when it's not humid and hot.
Yeah.
On the Greenbelt. It just takes some warning.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. My friend lives in Atlanta part of the time and has done that Greenbelt a lot. Totally. So the Pinhoti goes not too far from Atlanta.
Yeah. Some rad trails over there. Atlanta people. Wow.
They really do. The South has an awesome trail community and really fun trails for sure. Mm-hmm. And some gnarly technical climbing and descending. Not so much, not Florida, but Alabama, Georgia.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people wouldn't think that of those places, right? So that's pretty cool.
Rural Jewels out there. That's a harder qualifier, 48 hour cutoff.
Yeah.
It's bad sign when there's a 48 hour cutoff for a hundred miler. You're like, they have that for a reason.
Yeah. Good.
No,
point.
When you look at Ure 100 and Hard Rock, all when you start getting into the 40s. Oh, that is not kind.
I think we can start to wrap things up, but I think we really wanted to hear a little bit about, first of all, what are your cat's names? Can you tell everyone what your cat's names are?
Yes.
This is my question.
Yeah.
So this is by far the most important part of the conversation. My cat's names are Michael Scott and Dwight Schrute. Michael came first, of course, and they are both stray cats from Italy that basically, one was living in a car at 5 weeks old and the other was living in a trash can. So they're just little babies.
Did you fly them back over? Yeah, I guess you had to, right?
Yeah. So there's a lot of stray animals in Italy. And then there's Americans who move over there and end up with two or three animals coming back. So they actually make it really easy for Americans to bring animals back.
They're like, take them
through the middle. Yes, exactly.
Take all the animals.
mostly the military, especially, I think, makes it a bit easier. But yeah, they have Italian passports. They flew during COVID. We were on a cargo plane. So they flew back on a cargo plane and they've driven across the country. They've gone to like all sorts of places. So they are well-traveled kitties.
That's awesome. Since we're on the topic, Isabella, how are your dogs doing?
Oh, it's sprinkler season now because it's too hot to take them out. So we have sprinkler time in the backyard. Yeah.
Nice.
They're my emotional support animals after my 12-hour CrossFit event. So they've been laying around with me the past 2 days.
Oh.
Romanoff was in the 4th of July parade. Dally watched.
What?
He doesn't know how to listen as well. He's a lab.
How old?
Dally is 7. He's lab pit bull mix. And Romanoff is 5. And she's American Staffy. Both were rescued from It's the Pits in San Diego as puppies.
Nice. Yeah. And now Dally, that's short for Dallas, right?
Yep. So we have our children have the same name. Yeah.
I also have a dog named Dallas. They're both named Dallas for very different reasons, but yeah.
Neither one of them listen.
Neither of them listen. I guess name your dog Dallas. They'll never listen. But yeah, I have Dallas and Desmond. They're a bit of a handful. I'll just say that. Desmond has definitely, they're English bulldogs. So unfortunately they don't live very long. So Desmond's only 6, but he's really like an old man. He's very grumpy. And yeah, Dallas just doesn't listen. Great. This has been awesome, guys.
Thank you for joining us, Alyssa.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is so much
fun.
Team
Switchback.
Yes. Ooh. Yes. Someday we'll see each other all together in the same location. Mm-hmm. I know the three of us are obviously Isabella out of state and then Alyssa traveling so much. And I know just all of our schedules are like insanity at all times, but someday.
Finally, Alyssa and I met up in a different state in Arizona.
A long time coming.
Nice.
We always have a joke. We're going to run into each other at the airport.
That would be hilarious. Oh my gosh. That'd be really funny. But someday when Alyssa's back in San Diego, you need to come here, Izzy, and hang out.
So. Yeah, I miss her every time she's in San Diego. It's, I'm going to be there.
And vice versa, right? It's because then Isabella's coming to San Diego in August and you're not going to be here.
Yep.
So. Yep,
exactly.
Oh, boy.
Hey, maybe hurt. Maybe we'll all make it out to Hawaii.
Oh, I'm not against going to
Hawaii.
That
would be so fun.
That would be super fun.
Not against it.
Have an awesome rest of your day, and I'm sure we will chat soon.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, guys.